This call is being recorded.
Good morning, everybody. This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. And I'd like to welcome you today to a conference call. We have Neil Alexander on the call and Samuel Golding, both of which are experienced and extremely expert in the areas of community choice aggregation. So, Samuel, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Okay, thanks, Sierra. Well, I'll give a general update on some of the exciting developments in community choice in California in particular. And I've covered in my previous presentations for MSF kind of basic program design and how it's evolved in California. So, as some of you may know, one of the exciting aspects of this is how community choice programs are beginning to implement very sophisticated energy risk management and customized services right at the outset of launching their program. So in particular, and I think we're at a bit of a structural tipping point in the industry right now, because there are several community choice programs that are either launching or upgrading to very active risk management capabilities. And so those would be Silicon Valley Power, which launched this month, Redwood Coast Energy Authority, which launches next month, and then Marin Clean Energy is also, they've been around for 7 years, but this year they're significantly upgrading their operational capabilities. They're bringing on another contractor that specializes in energy market transactions and schedule coordination. Additionally, Inland Choice Energy just released an RFP for services that will allow this sort of more advanced approach. So they're potentially very large in SCE's territory, so that's exciting. So let's get a little bit into the specifics of what they're doing and why that's significant. So the Redwood Coast Energy Authority hired a nonprofit to be their energy portfolio manager called the Energy Authority, and they're owned by some municipal utilities in the Pacific Northwest. And what they do is active market operations. So they have kind of 24/7 control centers, and they're constantly transacting with the market. They also provide a full suite of related services for energy risk management and portfolio management. And that includes long-term power planning and portfolio planning in shorter time horizons using fairly sophisticated and industry standard models and inputs. Procurement evaluation and contract origination. So they'll solicit for power products at various term lengths and with various product attributes to fulfill the CCA's portfolio requirements and policy goals. And they will use these planning tools to do evaluation of those contracts. And so they'll kind of stress test what the CCA's financial performance would be if they went with this contract versus that contract under a variety of different market scenarios in the future. They also do contract management, and then again, the actual active risk management in scheduling operations in the markets and settlements. So similarly, Silicon Valley Power has hired a private company called Z Global that provides a comparable set of services, although they were hired for a more limited scope than the Energy Authority in Redwood. Marin Clean Energy also conducted a solicitation, which received for these services and received eight bids. And they, after that competitive process, also selected Z Global. Other companies and nonprofits that are beginning to offer these advanced services to CCAs include, on the nonprofit side, we've got TEA and then ACES, which is the Alliance for Cooperative Power Services. They're owned by a variety of cooperatives. And then Northern California Power, agency, NCPA, and they're owned by the municipals in Northern California. On the private side, you've got companies like Sea Global, Pilot Power, potentially ABB, Tenasca, APX, and they teamed with Ascend Analytics for these solicitations, and probably a couple others I'm forgetting. But the overall point here is that there's a variety of private and nonprofit providers of these services. These services really fast tracks DCAs to the cutting edge of risk management, deploying a full suite of utility grade operations with a diverse portfolio of different suppliers and risk management techniques from day one. So instead of kind of relying on a primary energy supplier or power marketer for most of their requirements, and then slowly diversifying the portfolio and building up their capabilities over time, CCAs can now just launch with these services in place. And so we're seeing this play out this year. A number of us have been looking forward to it and seeing this come to market for a couple of years now. And I think over the next few months, as these initiatives start to be implemented and bear fruit, it'll kind of be the way of the future for the CCA industry in California. At least that's what I hope. Some of the documents I could already point you towards include Redwood Coast Energy's Authority's risk management policy. It's very comprehensive. You read through it and you realize this is what truly empowered public power looks like. Marine Clean Energy and Silicon Valley Clean Energy are both developing comparable risk policies for adoption. And these policies kind of lay out how risk is analyzed and mitigated within portfolio planning and operations. And then the CCA kind of will implement process controls and procedures with various levels of operational responsibility for their contractors to carry out transactions on behalf of the Community Choice Program as almost an agent of the program. That's been about 8 minutes. Sierra, should I kind of pause there?
Sure, that would be a good place to stop, I think. And Neil?
That was fantastic. Unfortunately, I think when I compare California to New York, I think New York, and I can go through the history a little bit, is unfortunately a little farther behind in CCA. So CCA started out in actually Westchester County, New York, about an hour, half hour north of New York City, population of about 1 million people. And in February of 2015, something called Sustainable Westchester was able to procure an order from the New York State Public Service Commission to create a pilot program. That pilot program took about a year to get to the point of getting enough municipalities and enough households to aggregate into a group to launch. And essentially, they went out to bid only for the electric service. They did not do the gas service. They just did electricity. And they went out to bid where they looked, Westchester Power was going to become the default ESCO for every household that had opted in to the program and through the municipalities, as opposed to like New Jersey, where it was a opt-in program. New York's program in Westchester was an opt-out program, so you were automatically placed into what was called Westchester Power. Westchester split into two different utility zones, consolidated Edison, is the investor-owned or incumbent utility in the southern part of the county, and NYSEG is the northern part of the county. Constellation Energy wound up winning the bid, and for the northern area, and Con Ed Solutions, a for-profit arm of Con Ed, won it for the southern area. The program was launched essentially net effective June 1st bills of 2016. Right before that, based upon the success of the pilot program, the New York State Public Service Commission adopted a statewide resolution allowing CCA statewide. During the ensuing months, while Westchester Power hit some initial bumps, which I can talk to in a minute or in some Q&A, there were further orders. New York City, which hadn't been part of necessarily the statewide order, got its own express order in October of 2013. And NYSERDA, which is the New York State basically Energy Research Department, created a toolkit in theory with a fact sheet, step-by-step guidance, an FAQ, and they even made template CCA implementation plans, CCA authorizing legislation so municipalities could create this by home rule, because we did not get in New York state legislation authorizing this. Basically, it was agreed to by the New York State Attorney General's office that municipalities could use their home rule authority, should they so choose, to regulate in this area. So the templates also created sample intermunicipal agreements so municipalities could aggregate. Additionally, sample opt-out letters, because there were all kinds of notice requirements and education requirements on the new entities that were going to serve as ESCOs under CCA. And if you check the REV, which is, you know, Reforming the Energy Vision, the docket for that, for creating CCA, you'll see that immediately after the creation of the statewide order, you saw a flurry of activity by a client of our firm's named Jewel Assets, who had been behind the pro bono Westchester Power. Mega was another group. And then a couple of different municipal entities were trying to start aggregating, and they were firing in comments. And in Mega's case, they were, in Good Energy's case, they were actually even putting in their own sample agreements to make sure the PSC would agree with it in advance. And there was a flurry of activity. What's been interesting is the way the program has been set up is that, unfortunately, it's now a year later, just about. April 21st will be the one-year anniversary of the statewide order creating CCA as an available program statewide. And other than Westchester Power serving about 100,000 households in 15 municipalities, unfortunately, no one else has crossed the finish line yet. I think there's a lot of activity. I think what I've heard in talking with friends and colleagues in the industry, whether it's Good Energy or Jewel Assets or Mega or a group in, they've sort of staked out territories in different areas of the state of New York where they're trying to aggregate people. Mega's got a very large aspiration to try and pull together 500,000 people into one group. It hasn't quite hit yet, and I think the large part of the problem, that if I put my own personal opinion here, is that while Westchester Power has been successful in saving people money, that was a guarantee that was required by the legislation, the work to get an operating entity is not chargeable to municipal residents generally. the way CCA was set up in New York State, I think, unfortunately, put a little bit of the cart ahead of the horse, and it said that essentially the CCA administrator can be paid out of the CCA revenue, and they can be reimbursed for the front end costs once you have an actual program. But it didn't take into consideration the time, energy, and monies that were going to be required in order to create those entities, and therefore the hurdles that essentially would require a CCA administrator to front load all the costs and then collect their funds through the supply charge on the backside. And I think that has put a lot of people at risk. And although the legislation was there to enable a J-curve to get ramped up, I think we've seen a very slow, long plateau, because although there's savings for these municipalities to pass along to their residents, the potential CCA administrators are spending their dollars wisely and slowly because they don't know who's going to cross the finish line, and therefore which opportunity is just a loss leader and which opportunity will they actually ultimately get paid on. And since it's through the supply charge, if you're going to promise to give a supply that's less than the existing supply for a moving average previously, there's not a ton of room for the CCA administrator to make money. And that's, I think, hurt the adoption. And now NYSERDA is starting to look at what other incentives and inducements does it need to provide in order to get the uptake that it's looking to do, especially with Governor Cuomo having a 50 by 30 announcement, which is 50% of renewable electricity by 2030. And, you know, we're still on CCA 1.0, let alone maneuvering towards 2.0 with demand response and DER. So I'll stop right there, I guess, for now.
Very interesting. Does anybody know, that's a good question for Samuel. Out in California, how is that handled as far as the administrative time and costs? Do you know?
CCAs aren't under any sort of prohibition on the use of their funds or their revenues derived from serving customers. So in other restructured markets where you have a fairly simple CCA program design, kind of like what was just described in, you know, taking place in New York, the CCA 1.0 approach, brokers and consultants have successfully kind of worked on an at-risk basis to launch programs as the markets develop naturally. So governments typically don't engage consultants on a fee, like an upfront fee or fixed price contract basis to, you know, study the program or anything like that. In California, the industry actually began by paying consultants to assess the feasibility because we weren't a restructured market and the regulations weren't finalized and there were all sorts of questions to be answered. It really wasn't a straightforward process. And so it took a number of years for governments to fund that sort of consulting work out of their general funds. And, you know, they figured out a model of CCA that would be a stable long-term government agency. And that's important because the policy goals of the programs in California, by and large, almost for almost all CCAs, are to be able to build new renewables and distributed resources. And if you want to build new renewables, you have to be able to sign a 15 to 20 year power purchase agreement. And so the developer wants to know that you're going to be around that long. So this brings up a really critical difference in the regulations in California and New York. Because CCAs in California can do anything they want with the revenues, for the program, within reason, they have been able to charge customers more than the cost of service and put the additional funds collected into a rate relief fund or a reserve fund. And so these funds can grow quite large fairly rapidly. Sonoma's up to $30 million after 2 years. Silicon Valley Power, I think, is projecting $50 million by their first year. And that gives them the balance sheet to engage in the long-term contracting, providing hedges against short price dynamics. And the reserve fund assures the project developers that the CCA is being responsibly run, and if they get caught short because of their portfolio strategy, they'll be able to weather some of that without raising rates and inducing customer opt-out. Now, in New York, can't do that. You can only collect an administrative fee, and so that's kind of regulated. Now, I say you can't do that. That's kind of the popular conception. But I read the ruling, and the ruling made quite clear that you couldn't take CCA reserve funds, or revenues, and use it to directly fund distributed energy for specific customers, which would be kind of cost shifting. But the ruling didn't actually discuss whether or not a CCA could collect additional revenues in excess of the administrative adder to put into a reserve fund that was, you know, ultimately going to go back to those customers in one way or another, or benefit those customers, because it allows the CCA to engage in more effective long-term risk management. So I think it's still an open question for the PSC and should be posed to them kind of point blank. With, you know, there's a lot of case studies and a lot of arguments in favor of that that have been developed in California. But again, market conditions, as was pointed out, may not be as conducive to collecting those funds as we're enjoying in California right now. So that's another thing to consider.
I think you're right. I think we're just behind. You know, as you talked about, Sam, you know, the municipalities found operating budget monies to do the studies. And I think that's where NYSERDA, I think, is looking right now, if you ask me, is to have some grants and grant monies out there to enable them to hire the potential administrators, or to hire really the potential administrators as consultants on the front end, to help them herd the cats of the municipalities together, get the MOU together, get the whole program to lift off, help them vet who the potential ESCO would be through a bidding process. And then once it's launched, then the administrators can be put through an RFP process to see who becomes the actual administrator down the proverbial line. And I think you're right. You know, the PSC expressly ignored the 2.0 aspects of energy planning and management activities and DER. And I think that's where we are. Is that, you know, you had mentioned one of the organizations is 7 years old, and it sounds, my guess is if you check their revenues, it's a very different profile over those 7 years of what it took to scale.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense for to me, at least, for the PSC to fund the initial kind of coordination work and political lobbying to launch these programs for these private sector companies. In other restructured markets, they've developed CCAs operating at risk and interest, because it does make them think very hard about where the political will is to form these programs. And if you're just paying them every month, regardless of performance, you're not going to get the same price signal. So
But the other thing is that why, I mean, what's the point of these programs in New York if they haven't yet figured out how to engage in long-term contracting to construct new renewables or really accelerate distributed energy resources? I would think that NYSERDA should focus on funding the exploration and development of program models, financing strategies, and that would allow those sorts of activities to develop in the market structure of New York. Do you know who, I mean, what the timeline is on what they're funding, or who's to talk to about how they're developing their solicitation?
I think the way New York has looked at it to date, and it may be changing, was essentially they don't want to create new municipal entities or new not-for-profits like it happened with Sustainable Westchester. Instead, what they want to do is, and that was the hope for the NYSERDA template and toolkits, were to get municipalities to aggregate themselves, whether it was a bunch of concerned citizens who would take this on as their own personal project to convince the municipalities to aggregate themselves, sign an MOU to work together. And once there was an MOU to work together, I think their hope was they could put out an RFP and say, look, we have 100,000 households, and you know, we're looking for a CCA administrator who will start the program up and run the program for the next 5 years. And I think what they're finding is that the municipalities are not taking up the cudgel themselves, and it's hard to find those citizen advocates who are doing that either, except for in select isolated places. And so the beginning of the program hasn't been as great. I also think it was the reason why they were willing to do an amendment to the business rules for ESCOs to force a municipal opt out as opposed to an opt in was the fact that you were going to guarantee some savings immediately to the residents of the community. So I think if the program existed and it was in the rubric was there for the municipalities to interact with each other, I think the CCA administrators that are the for-profit entities that are consulting out there would have no problem. As far as responding to an RFP, showing their wares, getting selected, and making it happen. I think the issue has been all that front-end work to get there that hasn't been happening and what's going to cause it to happen. Especially in New York, we have something called a 2% tax cap right now, which is that no municipality is allowed to raise its taxes, either school district or municipal property taxes, by more than 2%, or the CPI, whichever is less. So municipalities are not looking to incur any new costs. They're having a hard enough time maintaining services because of the tax cap. And to give you an example, in Westchester, it was about 35 bips with CPI last year. So, you know, you think about healthcare increases and pension and retirement costs and what they're going up at, almost double digits, and then the municipality somehow has to keep its budget but going up by less than 1%. They haven't been able to take something new on. Sorry.
I want to see if anybody else here has any questions. Just go ahead and dive in. I see there's one person here I don't recognize the phone number on. Would you like to identify yourself? There's somebody new. It says unknown caller. I don't know who that is.
Oh, that might be me, Sierra David Kay.
Oh, hey, David. Good. I'm glad you could make it.
I'm calling from my Cornell number, which which doesn't say who I am.
Yeah, David is one of the newer members here. He's from Cornell University, working on a lot of projects. And David, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us what you do.
Sure. I'm a senior extension associate in the Community and Regional Development Institute, which is in Cornell's Department of Development Sociology, and I work on a lot of land use and energy-related topics, which are most relevant to this. I'm currently involved, for example, in a renewables on the ground roundtable, which is being done at the state level, trying to look if whether or not there's a consensus-based set of principles that can be derived regarding the rollout of renewables intended to meet the electricity goals for large scale, particularly solar, but to some extent wind, which Neil referred to earlier. I actually have a question for Neil in particular, if that's appropriate.
Yeah,
sure.
So you mentioned you've particularly emphasized the high cost startup costs, really, and the role of the administrator and how, in a sense, that's not being funded. And you also mentioned MEGA, which is a pre-existing municipal collective intended to do some of that kind of work, and that they were looking at this issue closely. And I'm just wondering if you could speak a little bit more about what you know about their intentions and where they what role they might play and what kind of position they might hold, if you will, within New York State in this arena as an administrator.
So, David, nice to meet you. I have to admit, I know MEGA. I know the law firm they use. Great folks, and truthfully, I haven't had a chance to speak with their attorney, or candidly, but what I have looked at is the CCA docket, and I, you know, they seem to have a strong focus on the southern tier, and that seems to be what they want to do. I've heard things that they like to aggregate up to, you know, 500,000 people throughout the whole southern tier up into the Finger Lakes. I think they have probably the largest goal that's been enunciated from what I've seen. And, you know, I think that is a good point, is that they have some of that structure already there. I maybe I'm overemphasizing it from listening to others, whether it's Juul or Renewable Highlands, which is down in the Hudson Valley. Both of those are operating there. I know that there's a group in Sullivan that's looking to become a local development corporation and wants to be more of a quasi-public supply-only utility, which I think is more of a California thing that you see, which we haven't seen yet.
Who wants to do that?
There's a group out of Sullivan. Trying to think of their precise name, Sullivan County, New York, that wants to create sort of a municipal utility, which has not been the way it was envisioned previously. But that's, you know, I think this front end issue is the one that I'm hearing about the most, and why I'm not seeing, you know, on the backside as a lawyer, the lawyer work that comes with MOUs and CCA implementation plans and negotiating data security agreements with the actual utilities. I haven't, you know, that work hasn't come to me yet in really any kind of form other than the work I did pro bono as counsel for Sustainable Westchester and Westchester Power, where we made it all the way to that point. I hope that addresses it a little bit, David.
Yeah, and I mean, because I think this is a generic kind of issue of, I mean, I really only know New York, but the generic issue is always with these kinds of things across a lot of different areas is what capacity do municipalities have to be innovative around things like this. And as you know, Westchester is one of the areas that tends to have relatively high capacity compared to the rest of the state. So it's not surprising to me that Westchester would be able to get its act together more than other places where, I mean, one of the reasons Mega got started was precisely because there are some during the deregulation phase in the 90s, legislators in Tompkins County said the people that started it were actually legislators in the county, and that, including some Cornell professors, and they said, hey, we're never going to get there unless there's another organization that figures this out, folks.
So MEGA...
MEGA, by the way, stands for the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance, and it was started as a municipal collective to aggregate, basically, demand across municipalities.
Yeah, I've interviewed them and read their filings. So they serve a couple of hundred municipal and county governments, school districts, and
as individuals and businesses.
Oh, okay. And they work with a consultancy, Energy Next, to structure those transactions to hopefully lower the cost of energy. So it's electricity, natural gas, and other products. I was wondering, does MEGA have any focus on renewables or distributed energy?
I couldn't answer that because I'm out of date with it. I've talked to them over the years about it. I know they've thought hard about it. I don't know whether they've really taken. At the time, they were being very cautious in ways that surprised me, but I couldn't be up to date on that.
It kind of brings me back to what Neil and I were discussing about what NYSERDA should do with its funding to help CCA in New York, because you're at a really critical time with market development and kind of the way forward and the models that are used and developed now will really determine how this market develops. I think if the value proposition to communities isn't large enough to induce their interest in CCA, you have to look at the value proposition. You don't just fund more outreach. And the value proposition right now seems to be fairly limited savings because of the market structure. It's restructured, competitive. The utility goes to, out to bid each month. Rates reset each month. And it's, as you mentioned, David, capacity zone pricing makes difference there. So some locations will be cheaper to serve versus others. So what's if that's the primary value proposition of a CCA, it's not very strong. I mean, local governments have a limited amount of bandwidth and capacity. They're going to want to pursue things that will achieve their policy goals and be worth it. So if NYSERDA were to fund consulting work products that really develop a model of CCA that can accelerate renewables and distributed resources and be competitive, I think that would do a lot to allow the development of these programs. Neil, does that make sense to you?
I definitely agree with where you're headed. They need to put more on the table, and it is a domino issue. You know, once you knock down the first few dominoes, as you're talking about doing, then everything else is going to fall into place. Now, you know, you could also say that the statewide order has been in existence for not even a year. Westchester Power hasn't even been operating for a year. So while all of us who are on the freewheeling, deregulate, pro-CCA side, there's a lot going on in the overall REV that if you're the ISO or you're an investor-owned utility or an incumbent utility, you're starting to say, hold on a second here. I have to provide safe, adequate, and reliable electricity. And you're in a rush to take away my service business from me. You're leaving me with other businesses which have infrastructure costs. I got a bunch of solar, my queues are filling up, and I have community net metering going on, which are, who's picking up the Caesar costs? how does my business model continue to work because I'm a publicly traded company? So I think I think it's an appropriate potential slowdown from the standpoint if you're taking a more holistic look. If you're looking at it as a CCA administrator, you're saying, look, you know, where am I, how do I get there? Because we do a lot of solar farm work, and right now community solar is capped at 2.6 megawatts per lot to do community. So there's a lot of, you know, I would say waves here if you look at it where, you know, you have to induce the marketplace, you get running, and then you run into, oh, we just are offloading all the infrastructure responsibilities for safe, adequate, and reliable onto the utilities as we're taking away their service, but we're forcing them to upgrade their infrastructure in order to bring in the renewables. And we just came out, was it, David, you probably may have your finger on it faster than I do, but the VDER just came out in March, which is the Value Distributed Energy Resources. We came out with an order of March 2014 of how we're going to get to a distributed energy valuation without shutting off net metering values and that arbitrage between retail and wholesale that a lot of people have used as the equity to finance projects. So I think there's a lot in play, and maybe I just made too much of a fruit salad of it, but I think that might explain a little bit of why we're not seeing a J-curve, but it's really a long plateau.
I would underscore David, again, I would underscore that. I think it's a very confusing, from the municipality perspective, which I know better, it's a very confusing and changing environment. So getting people to make commitments to anything right now, unless they're eager to be those early adopters, is hard. I think the point that you made earlier, which I would, which I think was, I wasn't so familiar with, but I think is really interesting, is who is stepping up to the plate and is going to be the entrepreneur, if you will, to play that role of the administrator, or as you were saying earlier, what's the incentive for people who might not even end up being the administrator to just kind of help people work through this? And I look to the, things like the Solarize campaigns at the residential level where there have been community groups essentially stepping up to will simplify the choices for the customer and do all the homework on the front end. Maybe that's really what is needed at this with the CCA.
No, and to interject right there, David, for a second, and I'm sorry if that interferes with your train of thought, NYSERDA has given out ponds for marketing for Solarize, and you look at groups like the Energy Improvement Corporation of New York, who's won those kinds of grants along with other not-for-profit entities, and that's exactly the front-ended money, grant money, that NYSERDA probably should be spending, is to encourage groups to win that marketing money and create the aggregates. And at least if you're a Mega or a Jewel or Good Energy or someone like that, if at least the risk of winning a grant is that you only win the grant, but at least you're getting paid for that lead up work, and you may lose the ultimate RFP when that new entity happens, but in 5 years that there'll be a new RFP. Right? So you're getting paid for some of the work instead of it all at risk under the theory that you're wrapping up these new groups that you're creating with the I'm going to do it for free for you on the front end.
I just want to say one thing. Craig, did you just join? Craig Lewis?
Yes, I did. I'm impressed that you could recognize my number.
Well, no, I recognize your face, actually. You have a picture up with your name under it.
Gotcha. Yes, I'm on. Sorry for being so late. I really wanted to attend. I just had some other urgent things going on.
No, I wanted to say one other thing, too, besides that. One of the members of this group, and I hoped he would be here today, is Chris Carrick, and he is now with the Central New York Regional Planning Board, but he used to work with NYSERDA. So he would have been a very interesting part of this conversation. And I'm going to try to figure out ways to get everybody together that needs to be together at one time. It's really tricky. I'm not succeeding as well as I'd like to, but there's several people that should have been in this conversation and would like to have been, but the timing to schedule. So I'm going to start throwing it out with naming the people who need to be in this group and let you guys work it out, if you will, to figure out a time when you can all get there, at least as far as you think you can. Because this was recorded, Craig, and the early part of the conversation you probably want to listen to was really, really worthwhile and interesting. So go ahead, everybody. Dive in.
Now, this is Evan Hughes. I have a question about the connection that was made early on in the New York program. It sounded like you were saying that the hope was that these energy service companies would be the model for, and maybe the actual companies to do these the front end work. And I'm wondering why that didn't work out. I suspect it's because actually ESCOs tend to be purely on energy conservation type things rather than finding sources of generation for electricity or for gas supply. Could someone explain a bit about what the thinking was and why it did or didn't work? Is that part of the problem, that it was the wrong model for a startup?
It's a really good question. And you know, I can't give you a good short answer. The order does talk about, from the Public Service Commission from April 21st, 2016, about the fact that they just weren't ready to do DER and the full range of energy planning and management activities for CCA at that time. So I think you go ahead, Sam, if you were going to.
I was just going to point out to Evan, ESCO in New York refers to power marketers. But they may have customer-focused DER offerings, but by and large, their core business model is in buying wholesale power and selling it for more than they bought it for.
So it should have been the right place to start.
It is working in this sense that the Westchester Power, which hit the finish line and has been up, if you go to look at their rates, you've got a locked-in rate of 7.09 cents for 100% green, or the basic is 6.95, and right now NYSEG is at 8.3 cents. And
can you talk about the 100% green? What are product attributes?
Right. So right now, NYSEG, as the incumbent utility, if they're your ESCO instead of Westchester Power, it's over a cent different. So it's doing well right now, and that's, I'd say, between May and February, other than the, you know, 2 months, every other month, NYSEG has been over. So the price is definitely on par with the spot market.
Do you think that's because of the capacity pricing difference for Westchester?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to that. The why. I think the thing to watch in Westchester is whether Westchester Power and Sustainable Westchester can start looking at 2.0 and whether they ask for that authority soon. Because in theory, come June, they'll be a year in business and they should have built up a little bit of money to go try and do other things.
So they have a good reputation. They've got customer contact all over the place. They outsource their billing and data management and customer call center to the power marketer, right? And
right.
But you have access to the data, right? You know, is the data being stored?
Is the data being stored? I'd have to look at the data agreement again. I believe it is. I believe they're looking, they've always wanted to go to 2.0. So the question is,
yeah.
Are they ready?
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at, I'm flipping through the order right now, and about to, I think it was Evan's question, about 32 pages in, they start talking about how that CCA administrators are encouraged to consult with NYSERDA and to consider how other PSC initiatives such as community distributed generation could work with CCA. So it's not getting into it yet.
Yeah. Well, one kind of operational model tweak that they could do is to contract separately data management and billing, and then separately for the call center operations. With the price of those services is right now just hidden in the rate that they're getting. So, you know, if you take that out, maybe it'll go down. What's the net difference? Can you recover that in an administrative cost adder? Like, are the regulations set up to anticipate this? That's how we do it in California, by the way. We contract separately. And it gives us more flexibility in tailoring those options. So, for example, Sonoma Clean Power launched with Noble as their billing and data manager only. And then a few months ago, they've evolved, and they're more focused on DER these days. And they figured out that, well, actually, Noble's data management and billing is adequate for this business model, but doesn't have all of these things we need the system to do in order to support our customer programs, our DER programs. And so they released an RFO for another data manager to come in to provide those services. And I'm working on an RFP that would launch a CCA with those services built into the initial data and billing functionality. Similarly, on the call center, you could have, for example, outbound call center services as an optional service. And so you'd be looking for call center providers that can handle the volumes of customers with billing inquiries for CCAs on an incoming basis,
mm-hmm.
but also on a fee basis, sign up customers for aggregation into DER programs. And so then that gives you structurally that operational functionality in your model, gives you the opportunity to design programs around that. Maybe on a performance basis, so they don't get paid unless they get the customer, and they, you know, then you have some sort of revenue stream traced into the DER program that makes them whole, because you can't recover it. You might not be able to recover it from an administrative cost adder because it's supporting DER-specific customers, and that's the PSC doesn't collect all those funds from customers. So if you get into that level of exploration, you can start to kind of map out a model CCA that can actually deliver a broader set of achievements than just, you know, a little bit cheaper power if you're in the right capacity zone. But if you tie the DER revenue, you know, if you can actively integrate DER into your power management operations, then you can start to derive revenue from those resources, and that can enhance the overall competitive position of the program. That could expand service into territories that don't have favorable capacity pricing, for example, because then the DER is presumably going to lower those capacity obligations or engage in the forward markets. And, you know, the CCA could play a management role in really accelerating that, especially with all their customer touch points and their reputation.
Hey, Samuel, this is Craig Lewis. I agree and appreciate everything you just said. And I just, if I could add on one thing to that, the Clean Coalition is just finishing up some price comparisons on wholesale distributed generation renewables in California versus central generation. And we're basically at about 4.5 cents for wholesale DG solar in through the California's REMAP program, which is basically a feed-in tariff type program at the state level. And then the best price for solar out of, you know, a huge chunk, 200 megawatt size chunk of solar is priced at about a penny per kilowatt hour less. And of course, those prices are just strictly for at bus bar, at the point of interconnection, not including any consideration for transmission distribution costs. So we're basically at about 4.5 cents versus about 3.7 cents. So wholesale DG, the local renewables, is getting really close in price to central renewables. And importantly, if you do consider the transmission costs, then we're basically looking at the wholesale DG is 4.5 cents, and the RP, you know, the large central generation, is actually about 6.7 cents. So the local renewables are far cheaper if we get this corrected transmission cost allocation legislation or regulation passed in California. So really exciting development.
Wow.
When those results are finalized, I'll make sure to share them with you, Samuel, and Sierra, you too, and we can get them out to the whole group.
Excellent.
But we're getting to the point where this whole paradigm about, you know, central generation is cheaper is about to get turned on its head as soon as we fix the transmission cost allocation situation. And
I have one question. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
One question for you. When you talk about distributed generation, is distributed generation structured in a CCA environment?
Yeah, well, in a CCA environment, the CCA is simply purchasing the renewables from within its, you know, service territory on the distribution grid. It's got to be interconnected to the distribution grid with that energy serving local loads and
You're looking at local being as in within a reasonable distance from the city, or you're looking at community-type gardens or all of the above?
Yeah, so it's really just there's a physical characteristic. The distribution grid the distribution grid and transmission grid are two separate grids. They're connected. They have an interface, and in California, that interface happens at 69 kV in PG&E service territory and 139 kV in Southern California Edison. But as long as you're within whatever the definition of the distribution grid is for that particular utility service territory, which for the case of Marin Clean Energy is an example, that's all PG&E is the actual incumbent utility, and that's all 69 kV is the interface, the voltage interface between distribution and transmission. So as long as MCE, you know, staying with that example, as long as they purchase renewables that are interconnected within their service territory. Well, it doesn't even need to be within their service territory, but if it wants to be their part of their program, part of their procurement, obviously they want it to be. But it has to be within the 69 kV and under distribution grid interconnected, and it needs to serve local loads. So basically, Sierra, I think the best way to think about it is it needs to be within the transmission to distribution substation, which is where that interface between transmission and distribution happens, and then it just needs to serve local loads. In other words, it can't backfeed back up to the transmission grid, which right now nothing in California backfeeds up to the transmission grid, so there's no worry about that. We're a long ways away from that happening.
Is that kind of a standard definition across the country, or is that specific to California?
As far as I know, that's standard across the country, right? Wholesale distributed generation means it's local, which means it's within the distribution grid.
Yeah, that helps. So I wasn't sure what local meant, quote unquote, you know?
Yeah.
So.
It's just it, the easy definition, within the interconnected within the distribution grid and serving local loads.
Okay. Well, we're at 11 o'clock right now, or 11 o'clock my time, and on the hour for you guys. I can see a need, okay, several things. One thing is I am trying to bring NYSERDA into this mix. It sounds like that would be a good group to have. I'm in communication with them right now, plus several other people who are very interested in moving forward with CCA in different states, including Rhode Island. So there's a lot of people that are probably going to join, but I just got a hold of them last week, so it always takes a little while to make a decision. And then I'm going to try to talk to each of you guys to find out how you want to move this forward, because we have people who in the group who need to be in this conversation, and you'd want to have them there, like Chris Carrick, for instance, and apparently he just couldn't make it because of the conflict with other things. So I need to structure these so we can get everybody at one time as much as possible. So anyhow, I'll be contacting each of you on that. It really good conversations. So any comments or thoughts?
You know, for the scheduling, Sierra, one thing that I found to be really easy is to just send around like a doodle or a SurveyMonkey poll type of thing where you see everybody's availability, and it's all, you know, whoever's on that list can see really easily anybody who's already, you know, put their times on, and then they can just check and try to make sure that they're available at the same times that everybody else seems to be lining up.
Yeah, I'll check into that. That was good to know that particular, you know, product, because I was going to ask somebody that same question, what to use. It's getting to the point now where I actually have to do that to make it really quality. We have another really interesting conference call coming up on Thursday. I have different groups of people. Sometimes they cross each other. Sometimes they're more specific to one than the other. But Michelle Halsell, Sherry Gruder, and Myra Moss will be talking on Thursday at the same time on a lot of the things that the universities are doing to move forward with communities and cities on renewable energy, energy efficiency, and also climate change. And there's some interesting things happening in Wisconsin, which you wouldn't really expect, considering the political nature of Wisconsin. So you should be getting, you already have the conference call number. I sent it out. I probably won't send out another reminder. But for those of you who are interested, hope you've enjoyed. And we'll meet next time. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
Everybody, thank you.